Welcome to St. Louis On the Air. I'm Don Mars. We'll spend some time with Kevin Colleen. You may know him through his work as a news reporter with KMOX or as a local author whose fourth book was published earlier this month. It's titled Most Improved Sophomore. And like his earlier works, he stays close to home, Webster Groves, and tracking the escapades of his young characters. I should mention that Most Improved Sophomore made the St. Louis County Library's list of recommended summer reads, as you might have heard on a recent St. Louis On the Air program.
That library's really slipping, isn't it?
Well, I thought that was very nice.
Yeah, that's very nice of them. Thank you.
And it wasn't even about local authors. It was a heartfelt tribute to someone who happens to be local, has written a good book. I enjoyed it, as I have all of yours, Kevin.
You know, I was just saying before we went on the air, I really appreciate a Don Mars interview. And I should say this to your listeners, that when you get a Don Mars interviewing you, he's actually read the whole book. You probably underlined stuff, didn't you?
No, I really didn't.
Circled mistakes.
Well, you know, speaking of that, there were no mistakes in your book, but a number of authors come through here, as you might suspect. And I find in reading their books that there are a lot of typos anymore. I've never seen so much as I've seen in the last year or two. Big mistakes. I mean, words misspelled and
yeah. Well, those become the collector's item. You can sell those on eBay. You know, it's like the original issue of Ben-Hur with, you know, the repeated line or something.
I wish I had thought of that. They're long gone now. They're in our library here. But that's a nice mention that the library gave you that summer read classification.
Thank you. I've been blessed. I've written four comic novels. Mm-hmm. And generally, people have related to them. The first one was about a bunch of kids, you know, juvenile delinquents. And I remember at Stan Musial's funeral, there were some people in line, and a judge said, I used to do some of that stuff. And this book is about, you know, a comic novel about the 1970s high school. On the one hand, you're trying to be holy, holy, holy at some parochial prep school during the week. But on the weekend, everybody just went wild driving to East St. Louis to get beer.
And being shot at and all the rest of it. And
that actually happened, yeah, to one of my friends.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, how much of this material is autobiographical, would you say?
I'd say a good 50, 60% of it, yeah.
And your kids, you have kids who are older now. When they read about this time and part of your life.
Am I corrupting them? Yeah. Is what you're saying? It is sort of a problem. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I don't know if I want her to read this. But if she does, you know, it will give her a view to her dad was just like me. Just like, you know, the book deals with how young guys are interested in one thing mainly. If not only, and how, you know, they're under a lot of stress where they hate school and there's a lot of drinking. There was marijuana, you know, as part of often in the 70s at parties. And so, you know, it's very contemporary if somebody wanted to look at what. And I think this is something that parents who grew up in the 70s kind of hide from their kids, because the truth is we were worse than they are now.
You know, every generation has its episodes of things like this that go on. I mean, I go back a little bit farther than that, and it wasn't very much different than what you're describing.
But I think now that the kids are so supervised that they don't get away with as much. And, you know, like I'll project my own evil adolescence onto my daughter and think, what's she doing? You know, where is she? And it turns out she's with a couple of girls, and they're watching a DVD of Oklahoma and singing along to it. So, you know, they disappoint me that way. They need to get with it.
What draws you back to this period? Is it just kind of nostalgia?
Well, I think so. But also, I like the idea that, you know, when you went to these schools like DeSmet, where I went, or SLU, or the girls' schools, Viz and Ursuline, it was a pressure cooker of theological self-improvement. And also you're learning algebra and Western civilization. It's a big, how can I improve myself time frame where there's a lot of pressure on a person. And I thought that was just a fascinating topic for a novel, where you have people in the midst of the who am I question at a high energy prep school. But, you know, on the weekend, they're just trying to figure out who am I in a different way with the beer on the golf course and running around in muscle cars.
Do you think that the kids that were going to the parochial schools were really any different than those going to public schools?
Well, I've heard it both ways. I've heard that the parochial school girls were wilder than the public school girls. But when we never saw a public school girl during Monday through Friday when I was at the SMET. So we always thought they must be, you know, very fine in their lack of morals, that we wish we could meet some of them. But, you know, and back then, there was so much that was packed into a Friday night. You know, you'd go to East St. Louis to buy beer when you were a teenager because the drinking age there was lower. It was 18. You come back and you go to the golf course, or you race around, you know, racing 90 miles an hour. One night we even went to a wake of a friend who died, a friend of a friend, but that didn't slow us down. You go to Steak and Shake and just like five or six things. And then at the end of the night, you say, boy, it was a slow night. Nothing happened.
But doesn't it scare you to look back and thinking about having survived that time? I mean, there are a couple of scenes in your book where the kids are drinking pretty heavily. And then they hop in their cars and hit the highway and are driving way, way too fast with having had too much to drink.
Yeah. And, you know, that I've had the experience. I didn't get to drive too fast because I had an accident when I was 15. Hmm. And I didn't get, you know, a car till I was 17. My dad said, you're grounded for a year. But I remember being in the back seat when people with a Cougar or a Mustang would just be skitching down the highway at 90 miles an hour. And I'm thinking, this is it. Yeah. You know, I'm going to be, you know, in eternity in the next few minutes. And I don't even have my homework done.
And that's the time in our lives, actually, when we feel like we're immortal, that there were, you know, nothing can happen to us. But, in fact, it far too often does.
Yeah. And a lot of times it doesn't.
Yeah. But, well, most of the time it doesn't. Yeah. But when it does,
we've
all been to funerals as high school kids and college kids of people who died way too young. Kevin, let's give folks a thumbnail. We don't do any spoiler stuff, but just a general idea of what the plot line is in the book.
How would you summarize it? It's a mess, isn't it?
It's a bunch of kids doing what kids do when they're 16.
No, that's pretty much it. I think this story is about two sophomore boys who are friends, best friends. One's Italian, and he's outgoing, and he's wants to find a woman, and the other is
horny, and I think is the.
Can you say that on FM radio?
No, you can't.
And then the other one is introspective and brooding, and he's having like a theological crisis because he read a book that suggested if you try to be good, you're just trying to impress yourself. So maybe it's a sin to be good. And it's a Mark Twain book. Did you ever read What is Man?
No. Anyway. But I know you make many references to it.
Anyway, these two guys who are kind of like the flesh and the spirit, one's like, let's go for it, and the others, they're always wrestling with, you know, what's the right thing to do. And they meet up with two girls who have their own hidden agenda, and they kind of trick the boys. And through the course of a weekend, you know, they come to this point of realization of who they are. Or, you know, I don't know. Is there an epiphany? This book may lack an epiphany. I think I left that part out.
Well, then there's room for another book. You left it in such a way as there could be a sequel. I made a note of that.
And I try to make it funny. I mean, it's all right for a book to deal with issues, but I hope it passes like the 10 laugh test.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, definitely does. Yeah. Which of these two boys, Patrick or Tony, is Kevin Colleen?
Patrick. Yeah. He's the. Yeah, I was very brooding and introspective in high school. I checked out a book once called, you know, On Being a Real Person at the DeSmet Library, and the librarian looked at me and said, "It's too late." And then my close friend Jim Gennari, the Italian guy, is based on him, and he was just. He was like my Zorba the Greek. He was just always full of life, and you know, let's go for the trouble. Let's do it. And you know, there are people like that you know that make your life exciting. But afterwards, sometimes when you're at the police station afterwards, you think, "How did I get into this?"
You never spent any time at the police station, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at my notes here because there are a couple of things that I particularly enjoyed. And that is your choice of names for some of your characters. One of the young female characters is Von Bierhardt. Is it Virginia Von Bierhardt? Come on, Kevin. That makes it a local story right there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
She's the daughter of a beer baron.
Yeah, you know, she's kind of the type of girl that you might imagine. Well, what would it be like if you met at one of these parties a Bush, one of the Bush children?
Sure.
Which I never did, and it's not intended to be them directly. But, you know, that's the height of royalty and St. Louis wealth. And there's a scene where they meet this girl who's the daughter of a beer baron, at one of those parties. Did you ever go to those parties back before social media where people would just follow a big caravan of cars?
Oh, sure.
And you end up at a house in Ladue. You don't even know whose house it is. And it's just a wild scene, like a Gatsby party. And eventually the police would come and pour out all the Falstaff in the grass.
But it happened when the parents were away. Somehow there's an underground telegraph that all the kids would know where there was an empty house, and they'd all congregate there.
Yeah, and for the most part, at those parties that I went to, you know, there were nothing got burned or stolen.
Unless they were smoking it. Yeah. Well, they were harmless enough, but there was one that occurred across the street. Your locale is Webster Groves, and as you know, I lived there for a long time. And there was one of those parties at across the street from where we lived. And it was one Friday evening that the owners of the home were away, but the kids had stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked out the window, and it was like looking at a storm of locusts. There were probably 250 kids had converged on this house and were wandering around and drinking beer. It was an incredible sight, and that's the kind of thing you're describing to a certain degree anyway.
Yeah, and in a way, you know, my friend, the Italian friend, would say, well, we were, you know, delinquent or we were dissipated, but we were soul-searching. And that, you know, these kids who had this intense scholastic, sometimes even, you know, monastic experience during the week were, you know, they wanted to let loose on the weekend, but also they'd sit around and talk about, you know, what's it all about? Mm-hmm. And then usually the police would come at that time and they'd run out the back doors.
The other name that caught my eye was one of the, if I recall, I spent a couple of weeks since I read the book. He was an instructor, I think. Wurstbroth is the name of the...
Father Wurstbroth.
Which looks an awful lot like Worst Breath to me. Is that what you had in mind?
Yeah, you know, when you're young and the teacher leans in on you and gives you some advice sometimes... But I hope this will be entertaining to people who went to some of those Jesuit schools. And when I went to DeSmet, which informed me for this, there were 20 Jesuits there. And, you know, they were good guys, complex people. But, you know, they didn't tell you everything that was on their mind. But people who go to these schools now, they don't have the same experience. There's maybe two or three of them. But this was a real... culture of the men in black would come down the hallway, the Jesuits, and they'd have their briefcases, and they had sort of a certainty about their moral ideas, and you know, it would really make you think. Like we had one religious teacher who would just bring in people from other religions, like Hare Krishnas, or a Salvation Army recovering alcoholic, or a nun in a mini skirt who had tried to stop nuclear proliferation. Mm-hmm. And the line in the book is true. We were all against nuclear proliferation that day when she came in.
How much of an influence did your Catholic education have on you since then in terms of your profession? Strong influence?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. Do you see any? I don't see any. Well, because as a reporter, you know, you can't think, well, what's my faith? But
But you obviously it was a big part of your growing up, and I'm just curious as to how that has stayed with you, or has it?
Well, I think I've wrestled with the idea as growing up Catholic, the idea of do we redeem ourselves or do we get redeemed, you know, by God? And I think maybe sort of the joke of the book is it's sort of a parody on, you know, the struggles of self-redemption. Mm-hmm. That, you know, when you go to these schools where you think wrongly maybe that you're, you know, it's up to you to follow these commandments and these rules and, you know, make a new man out of yourself. Like, do you ever see that statue down by SLU of the guy who's chiseling himself out of the, I think it's called the self-made man. Yeah. And I guess it's been a big struggle with me is do, you know, morally in a sense, do we make a new man out of ourselves morally, or you know, is that something that has to happen to us?
Did you take it seriously as a 16-year-old?
Oh yeah, because you know, when you grow up Catholic, you're always thinking about hell and what if I died now, and you know, and at the same time, you know, not telling any of your friends that, you know.
So always in the background, there's always the threat out there. Yeah. Isn't there? We're talking with Kevin Kleen. He's the author of Most Improved Sophomore. It's his fourth book, and the characters of earlier books also appear in this one, we should point out. But we'll come back and continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you prefer to send a tweet, we'll take one at STL On Air. Back with Kevin Killeen in just a moment. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Kevin Killeen, author of Most Improved Sophomore. A couple of the key characters in this book, Kevin, are young ladies, 16-year-old ladies. How does a, if you don't mind my saying so, a middle-aged man get into the mind of a 16-year-old girl?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I do have a 16-year-old daughter who always says, that must be me. But actually, I got a lot of help talking to some grown women who went to these private schools. Do you know Jane Duker, the attorney?
Oh, yeah, sure.
She's one of the regulars at KMOX, and I've known her for a while. But she went to Viz, and I had a long talk with her about, you know, what was on the mind. I said, Jane, I know everything about what it was like to be at the SMET and what we were thinking about, but what were you guys thinking about? And just talking to her and a lot of other women about their mindset. They were like us. They were insecure. They bucked the system. They put staples in the hems of their skirts so they wouldn't get jugged for having them. And you know, they thought about boys, but they sure didn't want to get pregnant because it would ruin their career. Mm-hmm. And they loved to party. Somebody was telling me his wife who went to one of those all-girls schools where you know, they wear the plaid uniform, the brogue. She would get in line at the East St. Louis drive-through liquor on a Friday afternoon with her brogue still on. She said, well, we got to get the weekend started right, you know.
Yeah. Well, after all of this writing, when you look at your 16-year-old daughter, what are you thinking about her life these days?
I hope that she's not caught up in some of the things I was caught up in. On the other hand, you know, it's like when you go through these wild and crazy times, it forges very close friendships. Mm-hmm. And there is a certain amount of wisdom that comes out of foolishness, you know, if you don't get killed along the way.
Are you friends today with the – I mean, you're still in your hometown, basically. Mm-hmm. Friends today with the people that you went to school, high school with?
Yeah, not as much as it used to be. I'm very close friends with the character who is
– Tony?
Yeah, Tony. I called him on the phone. You know, we talked about the book. And he suggests improvements, you know. That's Tony. But I didn't go to my high school reunion at the SMET, you know. I guess I felt like I hadn't amounted to much, you know. I needed to do something.
Oh, come on. Come on. You'd be the hero.
No.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have some people who want to get into the discussion. Let's bring them in. Marie is joining us from Maplewood. Marie, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that – sounds like Kevin is talking about my high school experience. And I was just wondering, what year did he graduate?
1978, Marie. Where did you go to high school? What happened to you?
I went to Xavier High School, and I was the last graduating class of 1974. So I had friends at Dismet, Chaminade, TBC, and then, you know, all the girls hung out with the boys, and man, it sounded like the same experience.
Yeah.
And I can relate to what you said about your kids being much better than you. That's exactly how I felt with my kids. One of the things that questions came up that I dreaded was when my son was in fifth grade, he asked me how I felt about premarital sex. I was like, oh no, okay. So my answer was, well, the Catholic Church doesn't really, you know, they frown upon premarital sex. They kind of got out of it that way.
This is a fifth grader asking you that question?
A fifth grader, because he was having, you know, they were talking about it in school, where he went to grade school, Catholic grade school. And so, you know, of course, they were talking about, you know, not having premarital sex because the Catholic Church frowns on that. So I, you know, managed to get out of that question, but that was a scary one.
Marie, thank you so much for the
call.
Thank
you, Marie.
Does it strike you as a little early to be talking about premarital sex?
Well, they start very early now with, you know, social media. My daughter asked my wife, me, are you and mom still sexually active?
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
She was in eighth grade at the time, and I said, well, that's none of your damn business.
Good for you. What do the 16-year-old kids do today? I mean, and you talk about social media. Are they still out on the golf course drinking beer and driving too fast and doing the kinds of things you described?
We won't know till they write a book. But I think there's a fair amount of marijuana out there, and it scares me because I think the marijuana that we smoked in the 70s. Didn't have the same threat that somebody was sprinkling fentanyl on it or something that could kill you, mm-hmm. It was not such a scary thing. I guess that was always possible. And I think kids are still drinking and driving, as we know. But there was just a wholesale ethic of that, partly because it was so easy to get. You just drive across the river and get it in East St. Louis.
The social media thing has made things so different, too. I mean, there's a lot of bullying going on. We know that, particularly in this age group we're talking about, there are a lot of cliques and people gang up on other groups and what have you, and it's become very, very damaging in a lot of cases. There are suicides, and just some awful things have come of this.
Yeah, I feel sorry for, the whole generation now. So, I mean, just think, Don, we would go the whole weekend without checking our status, Because, we'd look people in the eye and we'd, listen to the way they talked. And we were in tune with, a whole different set of rules now. Everybody's always looking down and they're not in touch with the hive when they're in the room.
Exactly.
People are always looking at some device.
Well, you can have a couple of kids in the room sitting next to each other and they're not talking to each other. Or if they are, maybe it's through their phones. I mean, through texting rather than having an actual conversation.
Yeah, and also I think that's made boys are less bold now to ask a girl for a date or to ring the doorbell and meet the dad.
Yeah.
We had to go through all those obstacles when we would pick girls up, and it's different now.
Yeah, it was tougher back in the day, right? let's take another call. Brad is joining us from Overland. Brad, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Don, thanks so much for having Kevin on the air. I've always been a big fan of Kevin. Incredible writer. I've known Kevin for quite some time, and incredible journalist. And I think what I always have found most appealing about Kevin is that he can be a serious journalist, but he always looks at things from a different angle and sometimes puts a funny, humanistic spin on it. And
Thank you, Brad.
Congratulations. You've done great, and I still love your story about the Larry Rice Christmas toy giveaway. Thank you so much.
He's referring to one time Larry Rice, the homeless minister, was giving away toys to the children of homeless people, and he was on one table were some plastic guns. I said, "What about these guns here?" And that was a small moment. But thank you, Brad. That's nice.
What was Rice's response?
He said, "Well, we'll have to check these more carefully and get some, some other toys in there."
Well, that particular play has moved on too, hasn't it? At least for the moment, with Larry Rice. Let's take another call. Fred joins us from Glendale, close to home, right, Kevin?
Hi, Don.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, Fred.
Did I hear Mr. Killeen say he graduated from the SMET in 1978?
Yes.
Well, I want to tell you, this discussion sounds like Webster Groves High School. 1955, my senior year. Nothing seems to have changed what I'm hearing.
Where did you guys go? What did you do on a Saturday night?
Oh, my God. You don't want to know. I'll tell you, the best music was on the other side of the river.
So that's where you went?
Went over there, and that's where you could, they didn't even ask your age. You could drink a beer.
Well, that is alluded to in Kevin's book, Most Improved Sophomore. Fred, you're going to have to read it.
Compare
notes.
It. You bet.
Right. Thanks. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Fred.
Let's bring in Deb calling from St. Louis. She's just connected. Go ahead, Deb.
Hi. Hello to both of you. The book sounds fascinating. I hope to read it soon. I just wanted to say that I'm a woman in what might be called later middle age, and I find out that there are certain ways in which my mentality is actually more teenagerish than it was when I was a teenager. I was a very sheltered, almost repressed kind of teenager, and it's not that I want to start engaging in really bad risk-taking behavior, but I find myself wanting to face certain of my fears and take certain risks that I never would have dreamed of, and I just wanted to know what your author thinks of that.
Well, you know, maybe that's part of the good thing about being a teenager that you're revisiting, that we were most alive then, because think of all the things we would do and the risks we would take, whether it was driving fast or talking to somebody or going on a date or, you know, kissing some girl or, in your case, some guy you just met, and, you know, taking a chance on life where, you know, now we have our day planners and kind of stick to it, and we don't go out, you know, take the trash out on Tuesday night. Everything's pretty regulated, but good for you if you're doing something risky.
Deb, thank you for the call. Let's take one more. That time will allow us to get Mike in. He's calling from O'Fallon, Missouri. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Fantastic. It's uncanny. I graduated also in 1978, but I was completely raised through the public school district, Ferguson-Florissant School District, but the experiences sound identical. And I had a lot of friends that went to Catholic school that ended up going to public school later, and I also became an auto mechanic. I went to North County Tech, so my cars were a little faster. Our numbers were above 100 going down the road. But we used to go out to, you know, jump in cars and the old roads going to Sioux Passage Park. And, you know, it's uncanny the amount of experiences. But I agree with what he said about the marijuana. I have a 36-year-old son. And we had a lot of weed back in our day, but it wasn't as potent as what they have now, from what I understand. But, yeah, that a little bit concerns me. And the heroin seems to be a much bigger factor now with the young kids than in my age group. It was mostly alcohol, weed, hallucinogenics, but not so much heroin.
Mike, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, that heroin is becoming a problem thanks to the opioid situation. A lot of people are graduating from opioids and moving on to heroin. Is there a sequel, do you think, to this latest book, Kevin?
No, this book stands alone. You could enjoy it, and as that man and the other calls just remind you of your own high school days. But it's the end of a four-part series that I was doing about growing up in Webster Groves and all. I think it's time for me to grow up. I'd like to write a different type of novel, but I don't know yet. I'm sort of poking around for an idea.
Well, they've got two more years of high school, so there is a little time there. Let me just mention the names of your other books, Snow Globes and Hand Grenades, How to Kiss a Girl, Never Hug a Nun, and this most recent one by Kevin Colleen, Most Improved Sophomore. Good luck with it, Kevin. Enjoyed the book.
Thank you very much.
Do you have something you
want
to add?
May I mention just one thing? I will have a book signing after the 4th of July, July 12th, at the Novel Neighbor on a Wednesday night at 7, July 12th. If you want to meet me, I think we might even have some cold beer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you might just have attracted
Novel Neighbor at 7, July 12th.
Yeah. Okay, Kevin Colleen, the book is The Most Improved Sophomore. Thank you once again, Kevin. Good luck with the book.
Don, thank you. You're my best reader.
Well, I enjoy them. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.